Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Text 26. Yado paramo manaso namarupa. Yado paramo manaso namarupa. Rupasya drishta smriti sampramoshat. Rupasya drishta smriti sampramoshat. Ya iyate kevalaya swasamsthaya. Ya iyate kevalaya sasamsthaya. Hamsaya tasmai suchi sadmane nama. Hamsaya tasmai suchi sadmane nama. Translation. When one's consciousness is completely purified of the contamination of material existence, gross and subtle, without being agitated as in the working and the dreaming states, and when the mind is not dissolved as in sushupti or deep sleep, one comes to the platform of trance. Then one's material vision and the memories of the mind, which manifests names and forms, are vanquished. Only in such a trance is the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed. Thus let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seen in that uncontaminated transcendental state. Please repeat. When one's consciousness is. There are two stages of God realization. One is called sugyayam, or very easily understood, generally by mental speculation. And the other one is called durgyayam, or understood only with difficulty. Paramatma realization and Brahman realization are both considered sugyayam, but the realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is durgyayam. As described here, one attains the ultimate realization of the Personality of Godhead when one gives up the activities of the mind, namely thinking, feeling, and willing, or in other words, when mental speculation stops. This transcendental realization is above sushupti, or deep sleep. In our gross conditional stage, we perceive things through material experience and remembrance, and in the subtle stage, we perceive the world in dreams. The process of vision also involves remembrance and also exists in a subtle form. Above gross experience and dreams is sushupti, or deep sleep. And when one comes to the completely spiritual platform, transcending even deep sleep, he attains trance, Vishuddha Sattva or Vasudeva Sattva, in which the Personality of Godhead is revealed. So doesn't this sound quite difficult? It sounds very difficult. Beyond all of our working activities all day, we're thinking of so many things, how to get things done, how we're going to achieve such and such an end, how to remove some problem or another, how to keep ourselves very busy and active. And then at night when we go to sleep, Srila Prabhupada says, according to what we've been doing during the day, we dream. Sometimes dreams can be seen as something coming up from the subconscious, something from a previous life, or something, even some message from the subconscious in this life. And sometimes dreams are described as the subtle body combining two things that it has seen. Srila Prabhupada says, just like you may have seen gold, and you may have seen a picture of a mountain, and in the night, the subtle body, it combines these two, it mixes them, merges them together, and you see something you've never seen. You see a golden mountain, or you see yourself flying. So many things, the mind on the subtle level, it's so active. And most people find that at night they dream. So many dreams come. But for those who are not dreamers, that means that they enter into a deeper form of sleep, in which this deep sleep, Sushupti, then at that time, in that dreaming state, the non-dreaming state, it is as if the mind is dissolved. It becomes inactive at such a time. And there is a peaceful, deep sense of nothing. Sleep is considered like nothing. Of course, we know that sleep is necessary for the body. So we cannot criticize sleep for its proper function. But some people really like sleeping. They'd like to sleep. If they could sleep, they would sleep for 10 hours or 12 hours. But no matter how long they sleep, when they wake up, the same thing occurs. You have to get on with your life again. So this is, therefore, sleep is considered in that sense to be representation of the mode of ignorance. Because all the working functions, the mode of passion, is dissolved. And there is just inertia for some time. Or, on the positive side, a replenishment of active energy. So beyond that, now, how do we go beyond that? We can hardly go beyond the mind just being active all the time, actively moving from one subject to another, one thought to another. We can hardly imagine beyond that. What to speak of going beyond deep sleep? So therefore, this realization, this actually to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is considered very difficult. Now, yesterday, we're continuing to consider analytically. Yesterday, we considered all the different elements and that how all the elements that comprise our understanding of reality, they're all material, they're all inert. They can't understand themselves. The body can't understand itself. The hand can't understand the foot. And the ears and eyes can't understand anything. But we think, I see something, I understand something. But then we understand by hearing that my eyes don't understand anything. They're senses for acquiring knowledge. They bring things to the mind. And the mind itself can't understand anything without the presence of the soul. The soul is the active viewer of everything through this apparatus. So we have chosen consciously to identify with this apparatus as being ourself. Now, if somebody has no higher knowledge, then of course they didn't consciously choose. This is what they have been given. But we are being given this knowledge so that we have the consciousness to discern. And discernment or intelligence means then I have a choice. Without discernment, without intelligence, there is no choice. Just like we see a dog. And a dog always acts like a dog. And a cat always acts like a cat. And you can't tell a dog, this is not very becoming. You should walk on 2 feet. And you should not go around sniffing unmentionable things. You should just sit here and chant Hare Krishna with your front feet, your front paws. But the dog doesn't have any capacity for that. The dog will act in a dogly way. But human beings also act without discernment, without intelligence, without understanding the gift they have been given in the human form of life. And so they run here and there, as Prabhupada would say, the dog runs on four legs, and he doesn't go a great distance. But men now run on wheels, and not only on wheels, they fly in aeroplanes, and they run from one city to another. Previously, Srila Prabhupada would criticize the fact that someone is living perhaps in a village, and he gets on a train, and he takes a two-hour journey every day to Mumbai, and then he has his job, and he comes home at night. He tells one little story where the father comes home at night. By the time he gets home at night, the children are sleeping. When he leaves in the morning, the children are still sleeping. And on the weekend, the little boy says, "Who is this?" to his mother. He doesn't even recognize his father because his father is so busy. Well, that's old-fashioned. Nowadays, people take 1 hour at least to get to the airport, and then they fly an hour. So they go to another state to work. And they go, and in Australia, people get in the morning, they go from Perth, where we live, they fly to Sydney because it's a much bigger town, city. So they fly there and they work all day and they fly back in the night. 4 hours sometimes they fly to get something accomplished. And they feel that they're achieving something. And the world will hand this to you as an example of, look what these people are doing. They're doing so many amazing things. But Srila Prabhupada, with his penetrating intelligence and his discernment, he would say, this is all just a living entity struggling within matter, struggling and struggling to achieve something that will not really be fruitfully his, because everything that he's achieving, he cannot keep it. If it's real, you can always have it. If you say, this is my apartment, then if it's really your apartment, you will go there, you'll be able to go there freely every night, and you can acquire all of these things, and you can say, these are mine. But actually, in reality, even that is not really ours, because at the time of death, man may be lying on the bed. His things are surrounding him as they always have done, but he's about to depart. And if you come running in and his children are crying and crying and beating their chests, and you say, as was said to King Chitraketu, why are you crying? Your father is right here. What is the problem? Your father is right here. Why are you crying so much? No, 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 you don't understand. Our father has passed on. Don't they say this? He's passed away. He has gone. So then Srila Prabhupada, continuing with his penetrating analysis, would say, this you're seeing before you, this is the father you saw every day of your life. You say he has gone, but he is right here. Then that means that who was your father, you never knew. You never ever saw your father. So how shocking is that? You never saw him, because you simply were preoccupied with this bodily relationship. But you speak like this to most people in the world, and they will not understand what you're saying. One time I had an experience. I was traveling with a friend who had a terminal illness, and we were traveling around the world. We had left from Perth, and we were on our way, on this ticket, would return to Perth. But we were hoping, and as Krishna arranged it, we got as far as Vrindavan. And when we got to Vrindavan, her sickness became so bad that she could not take her final leg of her journey back to Perth. She had to remain in Vrindavan. And there in Vrindavan, she left this world very auspiciously. But I had to go home. So there I was, I took my one ticket, and I got on the plane, and it was quite an eerie feeling as I sat down in my seat, and right next to me was an empty seat. And it was quite emotional looking at the empty seat. Then one young man, maybe in his late 20s, he came bustling onto the plane, and he pushed very respectfully his way past me, and he sat right down in the seat. And he looked slightly Indian, so I thought maybe I could talk to him. But then as we were sitting there and the journey continued, I found out that he was from Israel. So still I thought maybe I should speak a little to him. So at a certain point I said to him, "Do you know that the seat next to me, that seat was meant for my friend, but she died?" And he became very sober, because this was very real. The seat was empty. He sat in the seat and he started to feel quite thoughtful. And I said, "You know, that we went to India. She left this world in India." Now, he was a quasi-spiritualist. He wasn't a deep spiritual person. But as the conversation went on, it was so easy to explain to him the difference between the body and the soul, because the seat next to me was empty. It was very powerful. As soon as we started speaking that the soul is eternal and the body is temporary, and he would think a bit and think, "Well, I don't know if I really believe that." We'd go right back to this reference point. Look at the seat beside me. No body is sitting there. You know why no body is sitting there? Because the soul left the body, and then the body became inert matter. And we took that body to the Jamuna River and we burnt the body. And I stood and watched as the body sizzled, as one goes in Australia to a barbecue where they burn meat outside for a festive occasion. And I stood there and watched the body sizzling and burning and finished. And now the seat next to me is empty. And the man was so affected by this conversation that even after everyone got off the plane to transit, to wait in transit in Singapore, and we were walking out, he was still talking, and we stood for 20 minutes still talking about this. It affected him so much because it was graphic. It was so clear. The body and the soul are always very clearly, distinctly different when? At the time of death. At the time of death. After that, everyone in India knows there are ceremonial rites and they immediately begin. And you take the body and the body is destroyed. Nobody in their right mind holds onto that body and kisses the body and says, "But wait, my darling son or daughter, here, put your clothes on nicely, wear this nice dhoti, you look so beautiful when you wear this, let me put some makeup on for you." Of course, we decorate the body for the purpose of burning, but nobody decorates the body, sits it up at the table and goes on with life as if nothing has happened. Why? Because the soul left. So first we have to understand this. The soul is different than the material elements. So therefore we have to hear Bhagavatam. Who else will tell you this? Who told any of you this? If your parents or grandparents told you, it is because they learnt it from somewhere. They learnt it from here. And because our parents and grandparents never read the Bhagavatam, they never told us anything about this. They never clearly distinguished that the soul and the body are not the same thing. But what do we do during life? Okay, so the time of death comes and the body, inert elements, is there. And we all grieve the loss of a dear one and we burn the elements. But what do we do at the time that life is going on? So I had a thought about that also. Because in 1977, just after Srila Prabhupada left this world, my father also departed from this world within a couple of months. So this was very sad. Two fathers, spiritual, material, at the same time. And I remember some months later, I had a dream. And in the dream, my father was there and he picked me up and he was talking to me and we were sharing some affection. And when I woke up in the morning, I was remembering this affectionate exchange with my father. But then a very eerie feeling crept into my thoughts that, you know, this person doesn't exist. in our understanding, in our spiritual understanding, it's not like in the Christian theology that he's gone to heaven and he's waiting in heaven. My Father, as I knew him, he's waiting up there, and when I'm ready, I'll go there and I'll see him again and be with him again. But there's something very stark in the Vedic knowledge. It's so stark. It's so delineating. It's like a knife that cuts right through all the illusion. This person, as I knew him as my father, where is he now? He doesn't exist. The body is cremated. The body is gone. The body I see with my mind's eyes is no longer there. He's already taken another birth somewhere. So it was an extremely eerie feeling. My father, where is he? He doesn't exist. But I was listening just yesterday afternoon to Srila Prabhupada on a tape. And he was speaking very strong, again, very eerie words for one who is attached to this life and this body as being real. He was saying, daughter, illusion. Husband, illusion. Father, illusion. Mother, illusion. And as he was ticking off the list, I was thinking, can't you just leave one? Just one, please. This is too much. You're ticking them all off. Illusion, illusion, illusion. But then I thought to myself, yes, but when you wake up after a dream, especially a fanciful dream, a dream that doesn't quite make any sense, you wake up and you think, oh, I'm glad that was just a dream. And you don't think illogically, oh, that was a terrible dream, but I'm glad that so-and-so in my dream still exists. They're real. The rest of the dream, I'm glad to get rid of that. No, we have to understand, and this is very difficult to penetrate through the heart of the living entity, through the thinking, feeling, and willing processes, that this world is a dream. The whole thing is a dream. If the whole thing is a dream, the good is a dream, but the bad is also a dream. So when you lament for the good not being real, be very happy because the bad is not real also. And when you lament that, oh, does that mean I think I'm so intelligent, but I'm not, it's a dream? Yes. But when you think, oh, I'm so miserable, I'm so hopeless, that too is a dream. The whole thing is unreal. So the thought that came to my mind after the dream about my father was, then why do I spend my whole life until he dies thinking that he's real? And then at the time of death, I transfer over to this other understanding and say, oh, that he's just an illusion. That was an illusory relationship. Isn't there something illogical there? Then it's an illusion. Now it's reality. So therefore, the thought that came to my mind then was, so why not penetrate into this mysterious realm of what is reality then, now? Why not wait until the sobering moment when the axe falls, clunk, and death has arrived? Why not do it now? Why not find out the mysteries of spiritual transcendence in the time of my life when I have some capacity? I'm not mourning. I'm not old and frail yet. I'm not going to leave it till the very last moment. And then when I'm old and feeble, I'll say, now let me try to understand these deep spiritual subject matters. No, let me do it now while I have as much capacity as possible. Let me ask these questions. If this is all unreal, then what is reality like? How can I enter into reality? Here it is said to be very difficult. It's beyond even our deep sleep state. How can I do it? So this was the question we finished with yesterday. Here is the analytical study of the elements of the material world so that you can understand that this is not alive, and this is matter, and this is matter, and so on and so on and so on and so on, until you can penetrate to understand that I am conscious, I am not matter, because I move and touch and feel and think. So I am separate from these things. We can have some little insight through this knowledge. But now what do we do? Here Srila Prabhupada continues. He says, Ata Shri Krishna Namadi na bhavet graham indriyai. As long as one is situated in duality. Now this unfortunately is us. But we are not wishing to be situated in duality, immersed in duality. We just happen to still be there. The train has not yet come to take us off from the duality platform. As long as one is situated in duality on the sensual platform, gross and subtle, realization of the original personality of Godhead is impossible. Realization. Not approaching the Supreme Person is impossible, but realization, complete realized state. As long as we are still interacting with this world as duality, it is not possible to have that realization because there is no state of consciousness yet that is appropriate for the Lord to appear. He is Sudasattva. So we, our consciousness must be Vishuddhasattva, totally pure. Then he will appear automatically there. So Prabhupada continues, Sevan mukhe hi jivado swayam eva spuratyada. But when one engages his senses in the service of the Lord, or specifically when one engages the tongue in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and tasting only Krishna prasad with the spirit of service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed. So sometimes in the Bhagavatam, or Srila Prabhupada when he speaks, he will do two things, one after another. First, he will give us some understanding, some insight into how difficult it is to actually attain love for Krishna. He'll make it very clear. One time, I remember, sitting in his room, and we were not feeling very strongly Krishna conscious at this particular time. It was in 1972, and we were very young, and we had become a little lax in our sadhana. So Srila Prabhupada was telling us very firmly, you should be chanting your 16 rounds, seriously. And we were looking a little bit like, oh dear, that feels a little difficult to us. So then he said, you know, it's actually very easy to chant 16 rounds. But we, from our perspective, we were thinking, because we had weakened slightly, that this was a difficult challenge. And then he started to say, in previous yugas, the yogis, they would sit with fire all around them in the boiling sun. They would put fire all around to increase the intensity of the heat so that the discipline and the tapasya would be so high so they could conquer the mind by overcoming all of these difficult austerities. And sometimes they would immerse themselves in the freezing cold Himalaya waters in the middle of winter. Freezing cold. And they would go up to their neck in the water and sit there. Of course, we would be like dead. Or at least, at worst, we would be totally shivering or we were going to be dead very soon. But the yogis would harden themselves and stiffen their power of austerity by these mighty different tasks that they would undergo. So Srila Prabhupada would present this first. Now here is austerity, listen to this. And you're listening and thinking, oh wow, that would be terrible. I can't possibly do that. And he would go on and on and on presenting how difficult it was. And then he would step back a little bit and say, but for us it is very easy. We just have to chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And you'd feel such relief. Oh, yes. I think I can chant my 16 rounds after all. Let me start right now. And you'd be very, very enthusiastic because he had taken you to such a difficult position. And then he released you from it and said, now just do this simple thing. You must do this because some difficulty has to be there. You work very hard for anything. It's difficult to get up in the morning and go to work. It's difficult to raise a family. It's difficult, such and such and such. So many things are difficult. But you tolerate and do them. So some difficulty has to be there. if you want to learn to love Krishna, especially considering that this is the most difficult thing to attain, realization of Krishna. It's more difficult even than to see the Lord in the heart or to understand how everything is actually spirit. So how? You can't say, no difficulty, I'm sorry, please give me, I cannot do anything. So he'd make very difficult and then say, but very easy for you. So here Prabhupada is saying like that. When one engages the tongue in chanting Hare Krishna and taking Krishna prasadam in the mood of service, that means not just gulping down food. We may be hungry and we may take a lot of prasadam, but then we should be thinking, but after I have taken this prasadam, I'm going to do some service. One time I met one gentleman, he was a Vaishnava living in Vrindavan, and he was very, very austere and very strict. And I happened to be visiting him. And as I was there, one other Vaishnava came to visit him, who he was instructing. So I was listening. And he was telling, because he was a resident of Vrindavan, he said to him, in broken Hindi English, he told him that if you go to some kind of a festival, there is some kind of a mela, and you eat too much, he said, don't go to sleep. He said, immediately you take prikram around Vrindavan as many times as possible. Use that energy. If you overeat, use the energy immediately. So I thought to myself, this is a very practical man. You have to, if something you take too much, then do some service for Krishna. Keep the mood of service always there, somewhere, somehow. You try to do this. This is difficult sometimes. Other times it's very easy, but it's very practical. So Prabhupada says, by chanting Hare Krishna, tasting only prasadam, the mood of service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed. This is indicated in this verse by the word suchi sadmane. Suchi means purified. By the spirit of rendering service with one's senses, by do something for Krishna, one's entire existence becomes suchi sadma, or the platform of uncontaminated purity. Daksha therefore offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is revealed on the platform of Suchi Sadma. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following prayer by Lord Brahma from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.6. Tatapi bhumam magimanguyasya te vibhodham arhatya amalanta atmabhi. One whose heart has become completely purified, my Lord, can understand the transcendental qualities of your Lordship and can understand the greatness of your activities. So Srila Prabhupada and Krishna do not wish to make a process that's impossible. Because just like if you have a business, right, and you're selling some product, and you think to yourself, now, what price should I sell this for? Should I sell it for $2 billion? That's a good idea. I'll sell it for $2 billion. And of course, you may or may not get one person in the whole world to purchase it. But no businessman thinks like that. Let me make the price higher and higher and higher. He thinks, let me make the price such that the people will buy this. They'll be able to buy it. And then I will make my profit. So think for a moment. Krishna is not going to make his realization so impossible that no conditioned soul can attain it. Because then there is no reason, no benefit for the conditioned souls in the Bhagavatam or in teaching or in giving them anything because their position is hopeless. So obviously that is not the case. Obviously he wants us to come to him. But to come to him, we require the purification. And so to accept that process of purification is necessary. But because we all have different capacities, We have different eligibility. We have been chanting or we've been practicing for different amounts of lifetimes or even years in this life or days in this life. So therefore, Krishna, in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he gives gradations. And he says, you please do this. If you can't do this, if you can't worship me with undivided, pure, spontaneous love, if you can't do that, that's what you should do. But if you can't do that, then follow the sadhana practice. Because by following the sadhana, that means mechanically practicing. In the beginning, it's quite mechanical. That's why some people give up and they go away and they say, actually, I thought that spiritual life was a very mechanical thing. You know, I looked at the devotees and they seemed so mechanical. I talked to one lady one time. She told me like this. I did it for so many years mechanically. And then I thought, what's the use? She said, and then I decided I should do something else. And I said, I did it for so many years mechanically, I'm still doing it mechanically, and I'm thinking, what's the use? I should do it better. So this is what we should think, I should do it better. It's not enough to do it mechanically. But to begin with, it's mechanical. Just do it. Just do it. This is the platform of sadhana bhakti. Okay, so one says, I can't even do it mechanically, I'm too weak, it's too hard for me. So Krishna doesn't say, then leave. I don't want to speak to you anymore. He says, if you can't do it, even sadhana you can't perform, then do your work and give all the result of your work to me. Work very hard and give me the fruits of your work. Someone may say, that too is very difficult. I have a family. I have obligations. People won't allow me to give everything. And in fact, perhaps even I don't want to give everything to you. I don't have the platform of faith yet. I'm not that advanced yet. I can't do that. What should I do? And then Krishna says, then you work and give something to me. And then he tells you, cultivate knowledge then. You meditate. He goes on and on giving platforms. And he finally says, just do something. Practically speaking, Srila Prabhupada says, just give some of the fruit to an altruistic cause and you'll make advancement. Why? Because you're becoming unselfish. You're not keeping everything for yourself. Just give something. And I had an experience which I often refer to in that regard if I find myself suffering from lethargy. And feeling very much weakened in my enthusiasm. When I feel enthusiastic, I go straight trying to work on these higher processes. But if I'm having a bad day, I remember one experience that I had personally where I was in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong, for those who don't know, is a horrible place. It's a totally 100% materialistic place. Now, Mumbai is pretty materialistic, but there is an oasis here. And so those who can and are fortunate enough, they can come here and receive some great amount of replenishment. But I was living in Hong Kong, and at that time, there was only my husband and I preaching in Hong Kong. It was very young. It was in 1974, I think, 73. So I was in a particularly bad mood on this particular day. And I was on my way somewhere. And I was sitting on the bus. And I remember my mind was very, very disheartened. And I was feeling so unhappy and glum, as sometimes happens. I don't know if everyone has this experience. But when you're in a bit of a bad mood, sometimes you don't want to look at anyone. You don't want to catch anyone's eyes because you don't really want them to see. I'm not feeling so good today. So you keep a little bit distant from people. So I was sitting there not looking at anyone, just feeling very unhappy, trying to chant, but it wasn't successful. I wasn't surmounting the ignorance. And then I was sitting, the bus was going on, and amongst many people on the bus, one little old Chinese lady got on the bus. And she's standing right in front of me, so many people. But I wasn't looking at anyone. I wasn't conscious of anyone there. And chanting in a very disturbed way. And all of a sudden I looked up and I saw this little old lady just standing there holding onto the rail. And I'm young and I'm sitting down. So quite sort of like without thought, I just sort of thought, probably she should sit down. So I just stood up and she sat down. She didn't even thank me. She's Chinese. She just didn't, you know, we didn't interact. She just sat down. And almost instantaneously, inside my heart, I felt the light go on. It was so graphic. It was like the light went on. Krishna said, yes, you did a good deed. Now I can be pleased with you. You're sitting there struggling, but you just did a kindly act for another person. Instead of just thinking about yourself. Thank you. And all of a sudden, I felt some peace of mind. And it was so clear. It was from dark to light. And immediately there was peace. That it became, it was like one of those gifts that Krishna sometimes gives you, that for your whole life, you can remember that moment and refer to this principle. If you want to remove darkness, do something for somebody else. Or as my husband always says, and of course no need to tell you because Radhanath Swami is always telling you, he said, if you want to remove sadness, if you want to be happy, serve somebody. Offer some service and happiness will again appear within your consciousness. Why? It's not because of you. You didn't become happy. You didn't make yourself happy. It's Krishna. I'm seated within everyone's heart. From me, Krishna's saying, comes remembrance. I can let you remember me if I want to. From me comes forgetfulness. When you forget me, it's coming from me. I'm giving you that. And knowledge comes from me. So when Krishna sees we're deserving, he gives us some happiness. It's like he says, thank you. That was very nice. Thank you. And the mind becomes peaceful. The heart becomes peaceful. And then what should we do? We should do something else. We should do a little more. We should continue in this way because just like an elevator goes down to the ground floor and you can press a button, go up to the fifth floor. You can press a button, go down to the ground floor. We can go up and down those processes of devotional service at will. Or if we want, we can stay very high up and say, I don't want to go down. I want to stay on this platform of sadhana bhakti. I want to stay on the platform of offering everything to Krishna. And for that, then we have to pray and pray and pray to him for help. Because that can only be done by his blessings and not by anything that we're actually capable of doing. So this is how we as devotees attain realization. Difficult to see him within the heart. Not so difficult to see him in the deity form. Difficult to serve him within the mind and within the consciousness. Not so difficult to offer some service to him in the deity form. So we should take advantage. Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas, our previous acharyas, have made what is very difficult actually very easy. So we should take advantage of their gifts. And in this way, we should go up and up, gradually or quickly, up in the devotional process. And we should pray to Krishna most sincerely, please protect me from coming down. All right, thank you very much. Are there any questions? Any thoughts on this subject? Yes.
And sleeping.
Yes.
We are aware when we are awake. In dreams also, we are awake of ourselves. But in sleep, sushupti, we are not aware of our body. Does the soul and super soul meet at that time?
Does the soul?
And super soul. In sushupti.
Does the soul meet the super soul? Did you say? No, not according to this. I think the soul meets the super soul by a process. Not automatically. The conditioned soul, according to the description given here, is that when the mind is not dissolved as in deep sleep. So at that particular time, the mind is not active. But the mind is not dissolved in the sense that it's disappeared and we're face to face with the super soul. This is not the understanding given here in this verse. To meet the super soul, one has to adopt a process. Because again, the super soul is beyond that. When one gives up the activities of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing, or when mental speculation stops, that is mental speculation, thinking, feeling, and willing, and above Sushupti or deep sleep is transcendental realization. So it's above. It's a state above. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Mataji, for a nice class. It mentions here that thinking, feeling, and willing is an activity and that has to be given up to transcend. But the nature of the mind is to think, feel, and will. Now, when we try to dovetail that to an identity which is eternal, that is, as a devotee, and is that encouraged or is that also not the ideal? How do we deal with those thinking, feeling, and willing, which is inherently going to be there during even the process of chanting,
yes,
or to speak of?
Yeah. Well, one thing that I would say on what you just said was, first of all, the identity as a devotee is not yet fully eternal. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains that we have an eternal identity as a devotee, which is on the Vishuddha Sattva platform, as within one of those five rasas. So therefore, our present identity as a devotee is not our eternal identity yet. And therefore, there's still some interruptions in our sense even of being a devotee. So therefore, at this particular point, because our identity as a devotee, like you say, you're a devotee, or I'm a brahmachari, or I'm a grihastha, I'm a new devotee, I'm not a very good devotee, I'm a very intelligent devotee, this is not yet our permanent destination. So we use that like everything else. We have to use the thinking, feeling, and willing process. We have no choice. If we don't use it, it will just cause us to remain entangled within matter. So how do we do it? The first step is to say, I'm Krishna's servant. I'm a devotee. I'm a brahmachari. I'm a grihastha, and so on and so forth. But then from there, there's further elevation that takes place. But now this is where we are. So along with this identity that we consider ourselves, we better use it. We better use our thinking. How can I improve my service? What are the things that I'm doing that I should work harder to do? Is there anything else I can offer? So many thoughts will be there. And feeling. We have to train our feelings to be feelings and gradually in relationship to Krishna. But it's not very easy, and you might find that even with great effort, my feelings, I seem to still be quite self-centered. Have you noticed that? I've noticed that after many, 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 many years, I still find that I'm quite self-centered. So my understanding is it's not very easy to purify one's thinking, feeling, and willing. Because right now the thinking, feeling, and willing is lodged or is connected to ahankar, a false identity. So the best we can do at this stage is change that false identity, it's still present, into one of a devotee. I'm a grihastha devotee, I'm a brahmachari devotee. But time of death, if we have practiced engaging our thinking, feeling, and willing as best we can in a very humble way, because we still have this ego going on, we're humbly trying, then, or after many, many births, we are asked not to say, I want next birth to go to Goloka Vrindavan, because there may be a tinge of mukti in that, that it's so painful here, I just want to go to Goloka Vrindavan as soon as possible. Put me on the list. Hurry up. So we're asked not to even think like that, but to think it may take some time, whatever time it takes, I'm going to act as a servant, using my thinking, feeling, as willing, as best that I can. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Is that relevant to the point you were asking about? We have no choice. That's as Prabhupada would say, beggars can't be choosers. So as he used to like to say, we should make the best use of a bad bargain. So we have to use our thinking, feeling and willing in this way. Try the best we can and help others too as well. Because when we help others, then Krishna from within, he becomes pleased. When he becomes pleased, he can enlighten us from within. Enlighten us. That word enlighten, it includes a light. So he can enlighten us from within if he becomes pleased with our endeavors. So this is our method to engage these in his service. Any other points on that? Any more questions? All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.